tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one. See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a ballroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no my right to tote, the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for good Lord up above.
That was a little bit different intro than we're used to right there. I was introduced to that song, that's Colt Ford, for some young men out of Oklahoma that wanted to show people how Oklahoma boys were raised. And I have to admit, I fell in love with that song. And that song's going to have a lot more to do with today's show than my regular intro was. So it's a little different, but today's show is going to be a little different too. We're going to talk about how you think, why you think that way. And are you in a rut because of that? Now, you may be thinking this is some type of, I don't know, just jabbering about self-motivation or whatever else. It's really not, because I'm going to talk about some things today of a lot of guys are doing the same thing they've done for 20 years, and a lot of new guys are doing it just what they're told online, and they don't get to enjoy the full experience of trapping. And they're definitely not getting any better, no matter how many years you do the same thing over and over again. That's what I want to talk about today. Today, I want you to start trapping like you're a kid. Not like an adult. Not like some fire-breathing longliner. Think about it from the form of a kid. And are you becoming a better trapper? Are you training yourself mentally and tactically when you're going out trapping to be a better trapper? Because I promise you, you'll enjoy trapping so much more when you look at it from a kid as if you take it so serious that you're looking at it almost always like a job, or I'm just doing this to make money, or I'm doing this just to get a picture on Facebook, or I'm doing this just to get a big end of the year picture. If you trap like a kid, a whole new world of trapping will open up to you. Now, at the end of this show, I'm going to do something that I've never done before, but it's going to get probably some negative and positive feedback, but I'm going to have my first Rumor Monger Award, and that's going to go to Forrest London from Ohio. He's saying a whole bunch of stuff. It's just nonsense, and I thought, since he's trying his best to spread this out here, I would just give my side of the story a little bit and let you make the decision. But before we get into trapping like a kid and why that's so important, let's go ahead and do our sponsors. They do a lot to keep the trapping radio show going because of the server costs and everything we're having to do for everybody to be able to download and stream the shows the way they're doing. First sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Now, Scott's up in Elkhart, I believe that's right, Elkhart, Virginia, Elkton, Virginia. I went up and did a trapper's open house with him. He's got a brick and mortar store. Scott also is a fur buyer. He's got a really good coyote video, has his own lure lines. He sells all kind of traps and supplies. You can pick it up there, or you can call him or do it online to get his supplies. Scott's a really good guy to deal with. You can reach him at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com, or you can give him a call at 540-298-7227. Second sponsor this week, and our original sponsor, Trapping Radio, is Okie Cave. I'm a little fired up from the song. My adrenaline's going just a little bit here, so I'm going to try to slow down. Okie Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's been in this business a long time. He's also a fur buyer in the Oklahoma region, therefore the Okie. And you can reach him at OKTrapSupply.com. You can give him a call at 918-429-4648. Now, Jeb has got all kind of things. He's always running specials on Z-Traps. He's really big into the boards. He's got really good coyote urine. He's got all kind of traps, different lures. He's just one of those really good guys to deal with. If you're in that area or you want to try somebody new, give Jeb a call because he'll definitely take care of you. He's just that kind of guy. And if you start using him, you'll probably use him more and more often. Third sponsor this week is Wildlife Control Supplies. All I'm going to say is Allen this week because I still can't figure out how to pronounce his last name because it is not a good Southern last name and it doesn't seem to work coming out of my mouth. So I'm just going to say Allen. Now, Allen's a really... you're talking about a professional when it comes with ADC supply business. They're one of the best ran animal damage control supply businesses from talking with him that I've ever seen. And from the people that deal with him on a more regular basis than I do, because I don't use a lot of the stuff that he has because I'm not into squirrels and moles and stuff like that. But I mean, it's nothing but praise and nothing but professionalism from everybody I've ever talked to about Allen at Wildlife Control Supplies. They have proven solutions for wildlife control. They deliver value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry professionals. And if you need it for ADC, they got it. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. Or you can give them a call at 877-684-7262. They have an international number, 860-844-0101. Last sponsor this week is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They've got it. They've got everything you need. I just, UPS man just dropped off my waders that I got from them. They're the one that's, they're not rubber. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. I can tell you what they were. But that'll take too long. But they're the kinds that's got the brown nylon. They're more for coon hunting. For where I live in the south, that's probably a little bit better than some of the heavier rubber stuff because it's warmer. And we're dealing with a lot more briars and stuff here, which is one of those things when you're into trapping, you always try to have backups. When I started this season, I had a brand new pair of waders, some more expensive kind, and then I had a cheaper as a backup pair. Second day I was out beaver trapping, I tore a hole in one of them on a locust bush, and then about a week later, I tore a hole in another pair, my backup pair. So I've been beaver trapping the last week and a half in muck boots. And let me tell you, beaver trapping in muck boots and trying not to get overly wet has been an experience. But I put an order into F&T. They sent them right out. I've got them. They look exactly what I wanted to get. I've never tried this brand. But I'm telling you, some of the best guys you'll ever deal with. The people you talk to on the phone, they're trappers. They know what they're talking about, and they can give you recommendations if you're not sure what you're looking for. You can reach F&T at fntpost.com. Or you can give them a call at 989-727-8727. Well, I want to go ahead and get started into why I think it's important to trap like a child. But first, I want to go into why we think the way we think. Have you ever really thought about why does it seem that certain people are always coming up with new things? You know, I hear that about myself a lot. You know, you're always coming up with all this new stuff. And then, you know, I go, well, man, you can come up with some stuff too. Well, everything that's new's already been made. You know, this thought process is foreign to me. Now, why is it foreign to me? Well, the biggest reason is, guys, I take a lot of pride in not thinking normal. I take a lot of precautions not to think the way that we're told to think. Because when you do what you're told to think instead of thinking what you should and not using critical thinking, whether it be in your personal business or your trap line or what you're doing when you go to town or when you're out deer hunting, it doesn't make any difference. Most people do exactly what they've trained to do since they've been a little kid. Well, not really a little kid, about the first time you went to first grade. And that has made people think a certain way. And they don't want to really to get out of that box whatsoever. Now, what do I mean by this? I want you to think about the way you're taught to think. One, when you go to school nowadays, even when I was growing up, it was somewhat this way, but not quite as bad as it is today. You were not allowed to think, but you were allowed to recite, and you were allowed to regurgitate, and you were allowed to fit in the system, and you were allowed to do what you're told, and you were allowed to be quiet when you were told to be quiet, and you were told to think of a problem from the way that the teacher only thought that you should be thinking from that problem, and you were only allowed to come up with the answer that was correct on the test. Does that sound familiar to anybody out there? Let that sink in a minute. You're not taught to think in school. And you know, school's important. We all need to know how to read and write and do basic math and different things like that. But we're not taught how to think. And especially today, when you talk to younger people, critical thinking is something that's a foreign concept. And a lot older guys have been just, the only way I know how to put it is just browbeat into thinking like an adult is supposed to think. You do certain things to get certain outcomes. You think a certain way. And I'm going to give some examples, and this may get some people mad, but I want you to think about how far off you normally think about things than what they really are. Okay, if there is a farmer out there, and you're probably going to get mad at what I'm saying, but when you listen to everything that I'm saying, you're going to realize this is the truth. If you're a farmer out there, God bless you. I mean, you're doing work that a lot of people don't want to do, and don't want to have the risk tolerance doing what you're doing. But still, I'm going to say something that's going to get some people mad. But most people never thought about it this way before because they don't get into any critical thinking. If a farmer takes a subsidy from the government or has CRP ground that they're writing off to the government and they get a check for, have you ever thought about what that really means? That means that farmer is stealing from other Americans. Now, this isn't a political show. I just want to show some things to maybe to get you to think a little different about how you're looking at information, because this was really pertinent to trapping in a minute. So if a farmer's taking money through the force of government, through taxes, to give him money in his pocket to do his business, that farmer's stealing from his neighbors all across the country. I was actually on a control job with a federal judge who, when we got to talking about his property, was, you could tell he was ashamed that he took CRP ground and how much money it was, but he said, I still cash the check. Now, he knew what he was doing, but he still did it. Now, most people, when you talk to a farmer is the most upright the people there are in the world, and that's absolutely true. But if you're taking those subsidies, you're stealing from your neighbors through the force of the federal government taking production from one person and give it to another. That's not the way we normally look at how our taxes are being used, or as the farmer is probably not going to look at when he gets a check in the mail that that's where it's coming from. The same thing, I don't have children. But if you have children in public schools, you're stealing from other people that don't have children through the force of government. Most people don't think of it that way. That's okay. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying whatever. But that in reality, that is what is happening. That's just not how we're taught to think one. Now, an example I used before, most everybody as a kid has found a bird's nest with eggs or out of the bird's nest. Now, what's the first thing your mother told you? Don't touch the eggs because the mom will smell your scent on there and she'll abandon the nest. That's common wisdom that's still taught today. Robins don't have any olfactory sensors in their nose. They can't smell a skunk if you shove it their beak in their backside. But that's common knowledge. There's no critical thinking to think that whole process out. But we accept it. We tell our children the same thing. And we tell them children are going to say the same thing over. You just accept what you're told. Just like in grade school, you shut up, you sit down, you regurgitate what I tell you to regurgitate. You're not allowed to get off subject. You will follow this line. You will keep straight ahead. And whatever else you want to ask about this is not really that important, because the only thing we're doing is a test. That's the way we're taught to think. You know, I can use a whole lot more examples that are even more extreme to this. It would probably get some people even more tore up. Plus, we look for things as trappers and people that reinforce what we already believe. And then if anything gets in between where something questions what we already believe, most times a person will fight for that, even if they know it's wrong. And I'm going to use an example here of politics. And I'm using these not to be a shock jock. I'm using these for the because it's an outrageous type thing to say. But down deep, almost everybody will agree to it. Okay, I have voted Republican for most of my adult life. I will no longer do that. If a Republican is a libertarian and he truly believes in the Constitution, and I believe he's actually going to do that, I'll vote for him. If it's a Republican, the way 99% of all Republicans are today, there's no way they'll ever get any more of my votes. Now, if I'm talking to a Republican, this is where how we're trained to think is going to come into trapping in a minute. If I'm talking to another trapper and we get on politics, which happens all the time at conventions, and I say what I just said, there's probably going to be some friction. Or if, let's say, Chris Christie is up against Hillary Clinton for president. And we got talking about it. And I can tell you right now, I ain't voting for neither one of them. Now, what's the first thing that pops in your mind? Well, if you don't vote for Chris Christie, it's like voting for Hillary Clinton. No, no, it's not. It's not even close to that. Republicans right now are building PACs to target Tea Party members, which most of y'all, if you really look into what that is, even though you might not be a card-carrying Tea Party member, you're probably, from most trappers I talk to, are pretty close, more towards the Libertarian side and the Tea Party side. So the Republican Party is building PACs right now, getting 501c3 status, so they can do it tax-exempt to target, embarrass, and disrupt Tea Party members. Now, almost everybody in the Tea Party will vote for Republican. That's lunacy, is what that is. It really is. If you ask a true, especially a trapper, what he thinks about a lot of different issues, it has nothing to do with what the Republican Party does, but they vote for him anyway. Because you got to vote for either Hillary Clinton or Christie. One of the two. That's your two options. No, no. That's if you think inside the box. That's if you think what you've been taught to think. Not the reality of what it is. We could vote Ted Nugent into office if we wanted to. If he would take it. He didn't have to be on a ballot. Would it be hard? Yeah. Is it possible? Oh, yeah. It's definitely possible. I think Uncle Ted would make a great president. You know, I'd vote for Jeff Dunlap. Might even vote for Norm. Don't know. Scott Adams, not so sure about. But, you know, these are friends of mine. I'm kind of making a joke. But you're taught to think that it's either A or B. There's never a C. Another example is, if you don't raise land taxes, kids are going to get a worse education. So you get A, raise taxes. B, you get stupid kids. There's no C, D, E, or F. Well, in reality, to the person that gets out of what they're taught to think, there is plenty of B, C's, D's, and E's that you can go from. You got charter schools, private schools, home schools. You got all this type of stuff. Get rid of the Department of Federal Education. A bunch of different things like that that you can do, but those are never into the real play there. But that's what you're taught to believe. So what does this have to do with trapping? Well, it has a lot to do with trapping. Because if you don't realize the way that most people are trained, and I'm not saying that you are specifically because you may be different. If you don't realize that, you're going to take your trapping from a very systematic way, which is good to a point. And the reason I bring all of that up, all that's going to swing around here, and we're going to get in a whole lot of trapping right now. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you dig dirt holes for coyotes and fox? Do you live in a place that rains a lot? Do you have a lot of your traps that are completely out of commission, days on days end? Sometimes maybe 10, 15 days out of the month. But you're still, even though you're losing 20 to 30% of your production time by doing a dirt hole, what do you do as soon as the rain quits pouring down rain on you and filling all your dirt holes up? You dig more dirt holes. Well, if rain is the problem with dirt holes, and you live in a place that rains like I do here in Tennessee, either A, you dig more dirt holes, or B, you don't dig a dirt hole. No, that's not exactly the case either. You can dig dirt holes in the side of a bank where they're vertical. You can dig dirt holes where the water can't get to them by using trenching and different things like that. You can dig dirt holes more on the vertical angle, but in the side where you have some angle on the ground, and you could dig a trench coming out from that dirt hole so water can never ever stay in your dirt hole. See, those are all the options you've got as a trapper. But most trappers, and I've been on several trips where I've done the same thing, where you put them in on a bluebird day, it starts raining, and you're doing good to get maybe out of 3 weeks, you get one and a half weeks of actual trapping, because you're scooping out water and mud and resetting traps and everything else. If you're setting dirt holes in or anything else in trapping, if you're doing anything else in trapping and it's causing you problems, just like if it's going to be raining and you know it's going to rain, you're going to go put out a bunch of dirt holes. Quit putting in dirt holes! It's fixed. It's as simple as that sometimes. But you got to think, if you're fox trapping, you dig dirt holes. That's what you do. Why do you believe that? Why do you think that's the case? It's because that's what you've been taught to think. Well, you don't have to dig a dirt hole like it is somewhere that traps somewhere where they get very little rain. Trap like wherever it is that you're trapping at that specific time. That's when your trapping starts to change a whole lot. Where's the trap placement on a trap plan? And I've talked about this before. People are looking for formulaic ways to do trapping. Well, I don't know. Are you in a field? Are you in you got to worry about rain? Are you in the woods? Are you in high grass? I mean, I can go on and on and on about all these things that could change how your trap placement's going to be. Which way's the wind? Which way's the animal going to be coming up to the set? Is it an animal that's going to circle the set? How would an animal respond if he's going to circle set to still check out your dirt hole? All these things come in various, but most people want to have, I want it at 9 inches back and 2 inches off center, 12 inches dead center. It doesn't matter what the formula is. We hear them all the time at trapping conventions. I can tell you, if a person tells me their trap goes 9 and 2, that's someone who's thinking so far into the box, they don't even realize that they're in walls. Because there's no rules in trapping. Heck, guys, there ain't no rules in life. You know, the only rules that should really matter to anybody is you don't pick someone else's pocket and you don't break their leg. That's from Benjamin Franklin. That's the way all laws should be. But as far as rules go, who said that there's got to be a trap placement for a dirt hole set? You don't know how an individual animal is going to come up and work that set. You don't know if it's going to be a pup coyote or an 8-year-old coyote that's been around the block so much he's got a PhD in coyote trapping. You don't know which one it's going to be, but I know one thing for sure. There ain't a standard trap placement anywhere in there that does that. But why do most people go to dead center, off, back, this far? You know, they can write you a diagram, they can put it on a napkin, and no matter what they see when they go to the field or the woods or what the tracks of the animals are telling them, it come hell or high water, they're going to put that trap at 9 inches back and 2 inches off to the right. No matter what they see, facts be damned. No matter what they see, that's all they're going to do is that right there. That's a trapper living in walls. That's a trapper that no matter what happens on their trap line, they disregard all the information. And they never ever think, well, how do I do this? Most people will go, well, I really like so-and-so, and he says to put the trap at 9 and 2. And I'm not picking on anybody with a 9 and 2. I can say 9 and 4. I can say off to the left. I can say, I started trapping with O'Gorman. So everything with me was 12 and 14 inches dead center. Well, I learned very quickly that I'm not in Montana, and to where he was putting the traps doesn't really apply to where we're putting the traps, or the coyotes would never find the things. So I had to start adjusting that. But being an O'Gorman student twice, if I'd have just went, well, he's someone I look up to, I know he knows what he's talking about, he says 12 inches dead center to that number 3 Canadian modified Bridger trap, that's where it goes every single time, I'm not going to catch as many animals. I'm not thinking as a trapper at all. I'm not thinking. I'm doing what I was taught to do. When you read trapping magazines or you get on Wolfer Nation and you see me do something on a video or another person's website or a trapping form or anything like that, even if it sounds 100% plausible, don't fall for, that's the way I do it because that's what I read or saw someone else do. The moment you do that, your trapping slows down. Big time. Now, why am I thinking about this or doing a radio show on this? Hopefully, to get people that want to become better trappers and evolve in their trapping, they start thinking outside of this mythical box we always hear about. You know, one of the neatest quotes, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to butcher it pretty bad. Steve Jobs, whatever you think about Steve Jobs, irrelevant. Steve Jobs, and he looked about 25 or 30 years old, he was doing an interview. And he was getting interviewed about his business. And because he was causing such a flack in the computer programming world that he was getting a lot of these interviews. One of them, he said something in there I'll never forget. And I think a lot of trappers, if they would think this way, they would see their catch go up tremendously. One of them is, why am I going to follow the rules set by other people that are no smarter than me? So why are you going to listen to someone tell you that a trap needs to be 9 and 2 or 12 inches straight in? They're no smarter than you are. They may have more experience. They may have more experience in a certain type of an area. They may have more experience with a certain type of coyotes, whether it be sheep killers or just kinds that kind of roam around in the Everglades of Florida. You don't really know. But they're no smarter than you if you think outside the box a little bit. I tell you, one of the most amazing videos that totally changed the way that I trap, and I've heard a lot of guys say it was a waste of money. I think it's the first or second tips and tricks video. What's the name of that thing? It's one of O'Gorman's videos. And I think it's tips and tricks for hard to catch coyotes or something like that. It was more geared towards ADC trapping. And a lot of the stuff he was doing in there, when I saw that, it was like a whole new world opened up to me. And it's a very simple process. You set a set, whether it be a flat set or dirt hole, on a trail that the coyotes are going to be on, and then you blind set the animals before they actually get to your set. That's radically different. Now that was someone, if he came up with that or he got it from somebody else, I don't know. Whoever was the one that kind of thought outside of the mythical box on that one, my God, they were thinking. It's much easier to catch an animal before he gets really close to your set because he's acting more normal. He's not worried about what's going to come out of the hole or what's that strange, is something going to hurt me, what's going on. He's not going to have all these reactions from the chemicals that we have in lures and stuff going on. So if you make a dirt hole next to a cattle trail and you got your set 10 feet off while he's pacing up and down that trail to get the nerve up to come work him and you smack him, set works. That really challenged the way at that time that I was looking at coyote sets. And since that time, I make a joke when I have students and stuff. I have a system of coyote trapping. I call it Renaissance Redneck Hippie Trapping. And it's really, I get nervous when I put coyote sets on video a lot of times because it's so hard to explain in a 2 or 3 minute YouTube video of why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because I'm trying to, and I get it wrong a lot, but I'm trying to put myself in the place of the animal and not the trapper. Because the trapper is pretty irrelevant once he leaves. Whatever's done is done. So if the trapper can put himself into the the mindset of a coyote that's coming up to something that looks strange, smells strange, there's human scent all over the place. He may be getting sexually aroused because there's asafoetida or lovage in the lure. His stomach starts to growl because there's tainted mule meat in there, for example. There's a weird exotic something called mascaro musk he's never smelt of or didn't know how to spell if he could spell. All this is hitting him at one time, and he's going to start acting funny. That's the thing that you got to start thinking about. Not 9 and 12. 9 and 12 is kindergarten. When you really get to looking and trapping. Now, if you're just starting and trapping and you're listening to you know, me rant and rave about this for the next little bit, you got to have somewhere to start. 9 and 12 is good. 10 and 12 is good. 14 centers good. Go left or right. Don't really care. I mean, you want to have your trap somewhere in there. But as soon as you start putting those traps out, start looking. What's going on? The cow didn't get caught. Well, why didn't he get caught? Was the trap too close? Was it too far? Did he come around the backside? Could I catch him if he come around the backside? Did he come up through the high grass between the two clumps of grass on the side? All these things have to be going into how you're looking at making these set. Not doing what you're taught to do. Not doing the way that we've been trained as human beings in our systems today have been taught to do. We think like adults. Adults think in systems. Systems get normal results most of the time. And I, you know, like for an example, I'm going to tell you how well this works, and this is going to be painful for some of you. You go to school. You regurgitate what they tell you to regurgitate. You go to college, if you go to college, and you regurgitate what they tell you to regurgitate. You got to pass the test. In the military, we had a phrase we called cooperate and graduate. We're just getting through the school. We knew they wanted A for an answer, so we gave them A for an answer. Even if we knew B was a better answer, or C would work all the time, they wanted A, you give them A, or you don't get the passing grade. So you go to college, you've learned to sit down, shut up, be on time, do what you're told to do, don't cause any waves, fit in, do everything, wear the same looking clothes, talk the same way as everybody else around you, think in the same manner, so you get a passing grade, and then you go to college, you do the same thing but in hyperspace, and then or you don't go to college, you go get a job, then you get out of college and you go to a job. Now, what makes a good employee for someone that has a business? Someone that sits down, shuts up, does what they're told, is there on time, can follow systems to get the same response over and over again, no matter if the response you're getting is really true or not. So if you're going to be a salesman, you start this way, you lead this way, you end up with a closing. Over and over and over and over again. Nowhere in there is there any intuition or any thinking about this particular person is a little bit different. You know, most people don't go that route because that's not what their bosses want them to do. They want them to do A, B, C, D, E, F, do the closing, try to get the money. Or if you're in a job, you're going to have a process on whatever it is that you're doing, whether it be some type of mechanical or factory or whatever else. You do exactly what you're told. You do not think out of the box. You do not think of a better way to do something. You're there on time. You become a yes man, and you do what everybody else around you is doing, and then hopefully you retire and have some money to go to the beach or whatever it is you want to do. That is the system that almost every single person in this country has been raised to do. Now see, but there's a big part of that that's missing. It's called critical thinking. I'm not talking cynical thinking. I'm talking critical thinking. If you put your trap at 9 and 2, and you notice that 50% of the coyotes are coming in on the backside of your sets, and you don't put a trap back there, why? Because you're doing what you've been trained to do. You follow the system. No matter what, you don't think about it, you don't change it, you don't adjust it, you don't do anything. Now, someone that is a critical thinker is going to go, hey, the coyote's coming to the back of the hole. Well, if he's coming to the back of the hole and my trap's on the front side of the hole, even though everything I've ever read says the trap needs to be 9 and 2, maybe I should put a trap in the back of the set. So that trapper puts a trap in the back of the set, catches a coyote. Holy cow, man, this is cool. So he starts putting a trap at the back of the set on all of them. Well, now his catch jumps up a certain percentage because a certain percentage of coyotes like coming to the back of the set. Has anybody ever wondered why wolfers, the guys that caught way more animals than anybody living today, back in the day with crappy equipment, crappy lures, basically a lot of walking, a lot of just staking down prairie dogs, a lot of this. Has anybody ever thought of why they had trap placements the way that they had trap placements? It's because they didn't know how to trap. Some of those wolfers were catching tens of thousands of coyotes. Most wolfers use two traps per set. Most trappers today do not. Most trappers that were going after wolf, coyote, and bobcats, if you go back and look at some of the old stuff, I'm talking like from Mast and different guys like that, they were using three traps. Three traps. And those guys could trap circles around us with all our modern equipment, all our modern vehicles, our road systems, everything. We still can't touch them. But our system's in place. You set a trap at 9 and 2 or whatever it is, and you go down the road and you repeat, you repeat, you repeat, you repeat. Now see, someone that's a critical thinker is going to eventually go, well, either those old wolfers didn't know what they were doing, or aha, they did know what they were doing. Critical thinking. Why would a wolfer use, and a pattern you saw a lot of times around a set from a wolfer is if you have a dirt hole, if you can picture this in your mind, if you had a dirt hole in a road or something like that, they would make a triangle out of the traps. They'd be about 18 inches apart. Now those old guys that apparently didn't know what they were doing, even though they outcatch us with the equipment they had, which is amazing, they could hold coyotes with. What does that pattern show when you put it around a set? Most of the time, it shows the trap being 12, 13 inches off on a 45-degree angle from a dirt hole or a tracking of some kind and one in the back. Now, why would they do that? Well, for one, I'm sure they kind of thought, you know, if I put a trap just in the front, a lot of these things are digging me out from the back. Or I'm seeing tracks back here. So let's put a trap back here. Well, I put it on the right and they come into the left. Well, I didn't do me any good, so let's put one over here too. So they had what we're doing, but in spades about what they were doing at a set. But you very rarely will see a trapper do that. Because I can tell you from my control work, if I'm on a job and I'm on a time crunch, and I'm only going to be there for, say, 10 days, and I know on this size property I need to get X amount of coyotes to meet the magical 70% of the coyotes out of the population so they can get a certain percentage of fawn numbers, because of all the studies show this and that and the other, which we're not going to get into. Do you really think I'm putting one trap at a set? No, 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 no. If I think there's four ways for a coyote to reach my set, I've got four traps around that. Four traps. Does that mean I'm a bad trapper? Some may say that. May be true. But I don't know which way that coyote's going to come in there. But for me thinking outside of being just a systems-only style trapper, it gives me an option. No matter what they do, I've got a piece of gear sitting there for them. And then I can take that even a little bit further, thinking a little bit more out of the mystical box. If I set the set in certain locations where I can control the area a little bit, and I've got a trail, and I've got a bush they're going to come behind, or I've got grass they're going to squeeze between, or I've got cornrows where I can put the dirt hole facing back into the corn where they're going to come up on the backside between this cornrow, and there's some grass right there that gives me a nice looking trail that is going to be the easiest way for them to get to that set. I can set that location there, and now all of a sudden I've nailed that coyote, and it's the most odd looking thing you've ever seen. Because me, the trapper, is no longer in this system. 9 and 2 no longer matters in my system. The only thing that matters in that system is that coyote. How's that coyote going to work? You put trail cam footage on Red Fox, very few of them come straight into a hole. Where is 80% to 90% of all the trapping information? They got the trap dead in front of the hole. I'm not going to argue with people that catch a lot of Red Fox with a trap in front of the hole. But I can tell you this from me running a bunch of night vision cameras, that's not how fox work the set. Will they eventually get caught? Sure they will. If they want what's in that hole bad enough. I would rather catch them when they make that first step instead of making them take a lot of other steps. And if you look at it, with a red fox, they're coming in on the side. Not if you got a dirt hole and you got dead middle, if you can imagine that, if you put your trap dead middle, the part that's uncovered between that hole and your trap on the sides, that's where the fox come in at. That's where almost all the digging happens, is on that angle. I know guys at Fox Trap have seen that. They still put the trap in front. Why? Because that's what you've been taught to think. Not critical thinking. Critical thinking is super important if you really, really put it to use. Now let's talk about trapping like a kid. This is what's going on in my world right now. I've got a piece of equipment called a portable pocket. I got this idea from LT Gray, which a lot of y'all know from the internet. He gave it to me at a convention, I think it was an Ohio State convention 4 or 5 years ago. I played around with them. I've caught some raccoon with them. I've showed it to students. To me at the time, it was a neat thing, but it didn't quite click to what I'm seeing right now. So I'm sitting there and I'm showing this to a student down in Alabama, and he starts asking questions. Well, that gets my brain going. Because, for instance, how do you trap a bobcat? My system, me personally, is just like I do on Cat Collector. I dig a hole, I've got it blocked in, my trap's 2 foot from the attractant. There's no way they can get there except one way. That's my system. I try to force that everywhere because I've caught so many cats that way. I fall into the same trap as everybody else does sometimes. Well, he asked me if I can catch a bobcat with this thing. And I started looking at it. Looked at it from a whole new way that I've never looked at it before. Now let me explain what this portable pocket is, because it's not a complicated system. Originally, the way LT explained it to me, he was using this back in the fur boom for raccoons. This was way before the time of dog-proof traps. So you got to keep that in mind. It is a 32, 36 inch, probably, I don't think it's a half inch, but it could be a half inch piece of smooth rod, just like a stake. And on the very tip of that thing, you've got a 2 inch piece of pipe that is welded perpendicular to the stake. So you got a piece of pipe that it looks like a big T-handle T-bar, but it's pipe instead of just another piece of rod. So you can kind of see what I'm talking about. So you got a stake and you got a piece of pipe on top of it. And on the back of the pipe, it's crimped in to try to get the animal to come to one side. And you beat that in the ground the way LT was telling me. And you put he had these modified 1.5 Victors with a plate on the bottom so you can near about set it on concrete. Drive that in the ground, put your bait in there. It stands out, they can see it. But the thing that was really cool about the system is all you need is a trap in this thing. You don't have to dig holes. You don't have to worry about the rain. You don't have to worry. You can get it above snow level. There's not a lot of neat little things with that. But I was looking at it from the point of view of a raccoon. I was thinking in the terms of a system. You know, that's something you do for a raccoon. Well, this student asked me about bobcats. I looked at it from a totally different view. Yeah, I think we could catch bobcats. And for the next about week, all I could think about was, what else can you catch with it? I wonder if I can catch beaver with this. How about otter, muskrats, mink, coyotes, fox, and raccoons? this is where the childlike part of trapping is so important if you want to grow as a trapper. When you are young, you discover things. You're not so much worried about the outcome of that discovery. You're just discovering things. You go out in the woods. Mushrooms are pretty cool. Beaver swamp. Hey, that's neat. Can we get onto that side without getting ate by an alligator like when I used to play Army and down in South Alabama with them? You just discovered stuff. You had fun. You learned some things worked, some things didn't. But it was always discovery. And discovery had nothing to do with an outcome. You're just playing. You're learning. Now, as adults, do we do that anymore? Do we just go play? Do we do that when we trap? Do we discover? Or do we do systems? If you're in an area and dog-proof traps don't seem to be working the way everybody claims they do on the internet, my God, quit using them. If dirt hole sets don't work for you like they do for everybody for a cow, do something different. But most adults don't do that. They just keep just repeat and wash. Because that's the way we've been taught. There's no discovery anymore. And this portable pocket, I can tell you right now, I'm having more fun. Way more fun trapping right now than I've trapped in a long time. I'm talking massive fun. You want to know why? Because I'm trapping like a kid. Let's catch an otter with this bad boy. How are we going to do that? How are we going to present this? Where does the trap need to be? Does it need to be on a longer chain, a shorter chain? What kind of trap does it need to be? Can I hook it to a drowning rod? Does it need to be up on the bank? Does it need to be in the water? How high does it need to be? Does feathers help? Does glowing the unfair advantage help? I'm just discovering. I'm having a blast. And guys, I'm catching a crap load of fur with it. I'm catching right now. You're going to have a hard time getting me to go make a castor mound set. It's too much work. Takes too long. Other people can see that there's a big flashy thing of mud sitting there. I don't have to do that anymore. Do you know why I know I don't have to do that anymore? Because I started thinking creatively about a piece of pipe that was welded to a stake. What can we catch with this? As simple as this is. Have I had some things that didn't go right? Absolutely. I've learned some things that don't work very well with it. But I've learned I don't need to be playing in mud to catch beaver. I've been catching beaver on the river in muck boots with foothold traps. I couldn't do that the other way I was beaver trapping. Otter's the same way. How do you do this? Will it work on a muskrat? What's it need to do for this? It's what if, what if, what if. And what you'll find out is you'll try something and it will or it won't work, or it'll work better than you thought it did, then you'll try something else. Discovering, just like a kid, discovering. If you're at 9-2 on your dirt holes, what happens if you go to 14-2, 14-6? What if you don't even put a trap in front of the dirt hole? I don't all the time. It's not needed. Depends on the set. What's the best way to catch a raccoon? In the water, out of the water. What if we tried this type of bait presentation? What if we did this, that, and the other? Because if you want to really be blown away, and I hope no one down in Louisiana gets mad at me for saying this, or Mississippi, but you go and you see what some of those trappers are doing down there, and you'll cringe as a modern trapper as far as technique. Because we've evolved since then. You know, we've got a piece of equipment that needs to be on a slide rod or a drowning cable, and we got to dig a pocket that's so big that the trap goes just a certain way with this. You know what a lot of those guys still do down there? They take a nail and they drive it through a catfish head on the side of a cypress stump and put a trap in front of it. Now, how fast is that? Then they take the chain and they take one of those horseshoe nails and they drive that in a cypress stump. All they take with them is two nails, a trap, and a head of catfish. They're catching coons and mink and muskrats and otter and gray fox, which really close to the bank, and probably some bobcats. By driving a nail through a catfish head and putting a trap to it and then stapling that off to a tree. How radically different is that from the way most people coon trap? I mean, think about that system compared to we're gonna go buy wood and build a box and have it this way to try to keep the dogs out of it. We're gonna put conibears in it. We're gonna put our bait in the back. We're gonna have to cover it up. We're gonna have to carry them around. We're gonna do all this. Why do most people use the boxes like that? One, they don't want a live coon, and two, because that's what everybody else around them is doing. And they heard somebody caught a bunch of coons that way. Now, if they're catching a bunch of coons that way, knock yourself out. But sometimes, if you start looking outside of your area and what you've been taught to think, you'll find out there's a whole world out there on trapping. If you start trapping like a kid. If you start asking questions, why? Why is the trap in front of the hole? How can the trap's not beside the hole? Well, let's put it over and see what happens. Now, most people, the first thing they're going to do is, my catch may go down. Yeah, big deal. So what? You don't have to do it on all your sets. If you were to run a line and you want to run a coyote line with have half your traps in front and half the traps in back just to see what happens, your catch probably is not going to be that big a difference. But you'll learn there are certain situations that the trap does better in the back of the hole than it does in front of the hole. But because of the way that we're taught and we do a certain rigid thing in everything that we do, we're afraid to do something that's different. I mean radically different. Not a little bit different, radically different. Because it's not uniform. It's not what our tribe is doing. It's not what we see other people doing. That may make us look weird. It may make us sound weird to do something like that. I can tell you right now, if I can do what I think I can do with these portable pockets in Texas, I'll never have to take my auger to Texas again. I will never, ever put a dirt hole back in the ground. Never. Why would I? Through discovery and through asking questions, I don't think I've got to. Same thing. Think about having the portable pocket where it's 2 inches off the ground and it's mounted up like a chaff set. Do you think I care if it rains an inch? No. It ain't gonna fill up. My bait ain't even gonna get wet. Now if I put my trap in front of it and I use peat moss and grass clippings, unless you get like 6 inches of rain in 20 minutes, trap's still gonna work. Who cares? It'll still catch anything that walk, crawls, or flies. As long as you learn how to do what that is. Now, there's a learning curve there. That's okay. Discovery happens in that learning curve. Discovery is when I started playing around with a mafia set for otter. And I realized that beats body grips probably 5-1 in the real world. By doing a coyote set in shallow water for otter. Huge difference. You know, one of the guys that writes for me sometimes on Wolfer Nation is Dustin Drews from Nebraska. I love reading what he sends me to post. Because he goes from, okay, at the beginning of the season, I know this is going to work. And he does A. And it doesn't work like you think. So he goes to B. And he learns how to do that a little bit. And he goes, well, maybe I can do C. And you know, the most amazing thing that's happened to him this year is he's became a firm believer till you just absolutely get frozen ground in blind sets. He's caught everything in Nebraska you can catch without making a hole anywhere. Double on cats, coons, coyotes. You can blind set beaver. You can blind set otter with a mafia set. You don't have to do what you've seen as long as you go out and you go, what if? If you do what if every single thing that you do, you may start finding out you're doing things you don't need to do or you don't know why you're doing, which is just as bad. Trap like a kid. Start asking questions. Start discovering things on your own. You start discovering things, you'll be amazed what you can come up with. Absolutely amazed at what you can come up with. Because you're trapping like a kid. All of a sudden now, it's not you're going to just repeat all day long. You're going to get to see if this works. And then all of a sudden that little bit of excitement kicks in. Holy cow, look at this. I may be on to something. You may or may not be. But you're going to be learning. And the thing that saddens me when I talk to a lot of trappers and I get to really know them, they're doing the same thing today they were doing 15 years ago. They set their sets the same way, with the same traps, with the same lure, on the same location, they get the same catch. They're not growing. They're not learning. They're not training to do anything. You want to learn this. When I was trapping for Marion County, I used to treat that job as a training ground. And that probably has come from the military. You train all the time. You sweat in training so you don't have to bleed in combat. That was over our door and our CP when I was in the 502nd at Fort Campbell. You train. You stretch your limits. You learn things. You figure things out. You train. When I was trapping for Marion County, I'd go, this month, all I'm going to do is set snares. Just like I'm doing now with this pipe. I'm going to make this pipe work, come hell or high water. I'm going to figure out what works and what doesn't. I've got another tool in my arsenal after that point. Once I figure that out, I would try to snare beaver in places that there was no way to snare a beaver. Because there's not always a way to snare a beaver. Or let's do what Johnny Thorpe talked about and start catching coons in number 2 coil springs. For a month of my life, that's the only traps that were in my truck or my canoe or my boat. Number 2 long or coil springs. You can catch beaver with them. Pretty freaking good once you get a hang of it. But you've got to discover how that was. And let me tell you, the pep in my step was a little bit better when I had to go out and try to force things to work, because I was learning something. I was discovering things. I was learning what worked and what didn't. And that's a really, really, really cool thing to do. So don't get so wrapped up in everybody's doing this, so therefore this is the way to do it. Don't be that way. Start asking questions. Start trying new things. If you're a dirt hole guy, start making flat sets. If you're a flat set guy, start making blind sets. If you've never got into snaring, force yourself to snare, even if you got to go to another state to do it. Because at the end of whatever your trapping career is, you want to be better than when you started. And I've said it before, most kids catch stuff. Then they start learning, and then their catch slows way down. And then as they get older, they start reverting back to being a kid and their catch goes back up. You go out with Red O'Hearn, it's very simple stuff he does. You go to a trapping forum and ask a question, you'll get some of the most complicated, convoluting stuff that you've ever seen that's got theory behind it that'll take 4 books to go through. But the catch ain't there to back it up. Why? Always ask that question, why? Because when you start thinking like a kid and you start trying new things, I promise you there's more to be discovered in trapping than people realize. Right now, I'm discovering what a piece of steak and a piece of pipe can do. And I really don't think someone that's making mud pies is want to compete with the pipe. I really don't. I can put my sets in faster. I can put them damn near anywhere and catch beaver. I can catch coon. After I finished uploading this radio show, I'm going to set muskrat traps with them. I mean, think about it. Because when you start learning and discovering, you start finding ways to mix and match stuff. Now I can go to a pond with a trap and a portable pocket or a stake or whatever you want to call it, and I can catch muskrats to bobcats. I don't have to have all this other stuff. I'm going back simpler, but only because I discovered something. Only because then I stepped outside my comfort box. Because when I first saw the portable pocket, I thought, coon, I'm doing really good in my DPs. Why do I need to mess with that? Well, some places DPs just don't, are, it's not just made for DPs. You got to force them in there. These things fill that void. So I've got them. I'm setting these pipes on the side of the road in places that I would be afraid to set before, just for the simple fact it'd take too long to get the set in, and it would be too obvious that there's a set there now. I can push grass and stuff up behind this pipe because that's all it is a 2-inch pipe. Put a trap in front of it on one of my sliding rods and come back and collect the beaver. Never would have started using this thing if that student wouldn't have asked me, can you catch a bobcat with it? And that's the way I always hope that I trap. You know, when you look at drags, well, does the angle make a difference? Does the weight make a difference? Does the length of chain make a difference? All this stuff. I mean, it, to me personally anyway, guys, this is what makes trapping cool. You're always learning. How small can you get a coyote's snare before it quits working? How big before it doesn't work very well? Learning, instead of just going 12 and 14, 12 and 14, that's the way it is. Don't change it. Don't think about it. Don't do anything different about it. You put it in just like that and that's it. Nothing else allowed. Really? I got places through thickets. I can catch coyotes in an 8-inch loop all day long. If I wouldn't have started playing around with that, that's something I couldn't do today because I didn't take the time to discover it about 10 years ago. Triggered snares. How many of y'all played with trigger snares? That's a pretty neat thing. You get to playing with it. Most people will not try a different type of trap because that's not what they use. And then they'll be so resistant about using a different type of trap because it almost, you know, one of the pitfalls that people have in this game is if they're not using it, they've got a reason they're not using it, and they don't want to think anything different except what they're already thinking, because then they have to justify what they're doing. If you've never used a long spring trap, go use some. If you've always used long springs, go try coil springs. If you've never used a dogless trap, try them. You may find out something there makes it a whole lot easier for you. I just got in some number 3 Bridger dogless. I can't wait to go use, along with some Bridger Magnum 330s, because they close all the way. And the company's in Minnesota, not Canada. I'm excited to go use them. I'm going to see what the difference is. I'm discovering something. To me, that's what trapping about. It's not always about the numbers. The numbers will come when you really get into discovery. The numbers will always be there. Where the numbers are hard to come by is because you're afraid to try anything except the standard way of doing it. And the standard way of doing it is the reason most people do not enjoy life that they have right now. They're told they do exactly what they're told in school. They do exactly what they're told in college. They do exactly what they're told at their job. And then they die. And trapping, unfortunately, is the same way. You do exactly what everybody in your tribe tells you to do. And you continue on and you never step outside that boundaries. And it's a shame, guys. It really is. So this week, really, put some thought into something and go out and discover something. Discover something new about your trapping. Not just the way you've always done it. If you've always done little holes, make big holes. Make them really big. If you're just a dirt hole guy, start doing flat sets, like I said. Do something different. If you've never used kill poles on snares, build you some. Go use them. See what you think about them. Are they better or are they worse? Did you have more refusals or less? Was it quicker to put in or slower? Is there better places to put them than not? Because every time you answer one of those questions, you're becoming a better trapper. And to me, anyway, that's the thing that keeps me going about this. Right now, what's got this hillbilly fired up is a 2-inch piece of pipe welded to a stake. I mean, how complicated is my life, really, I guess, you know. But because of that discovery and thinking like that, it's allowed me to build a business inside the trapping industry where people think that I can think outside of this box and come up with all this new stuff. I'm just discovering stuff all the time. And I let people know about it. So from the outside looking into the way I trap, it's something off the wall. It's just discovery. You can do the same thing. And the reason I want you to go out and discover instead of just do systems all the time is because you may learn something that I didn't learn that hopefully you'll be kind enough to let me know so that I can go out and be a better trapper myself. Everybody wins. Everybody wins when we start thinking that way. So that's my challenge to you. Now before we get into this last section, I'm calling this Rumor Monger Award for a reason. And I'm picking on Forrest London for a reason. He has went out of his way in all different kinds of platforms between his forum to Facebook and all kind of different things. And this is what he's saying. And see, that's an interesting thing about the internet, guys. You can say whatever you want. But you need to be thick-skinned enough when someone says something back, is what I'm getting ready to say. What Forrest London's out there saying right now, the rumor that he's been trying to spread for about the last year and a half to try to stick, is, and it amazes me that his brain would think this way. That when I come back from Texas, and you see all those pictures of bobcats, one, he makes the assumption that I'm saying that I catch all those, which is not true, because if you look at my writings and stuff under my pictures, you will see the word we caught. We. Predator Control Group is a company. If me and Norm go to Texas, we're a team. If me and Scott Adams are on a job, we're a team. It's not a Clint thing. It's a job thing. It's something we can do to rely. Say like Texas, I'll show you how team works. I go down to Texas. I'm doing better at footholds than Scott the first year. So we have a quick sit-down meeting one morning. Scott runs fence on four-wheeler. I set foothold traps. That's a team. That's a team effort. That's what we do when we go to places. Sometimes I run the fence. Sometimes someone else runs the footholds. Didn't make any difference to me, but it's a team, it's a we. And what Forrest is trying to say, that I'm trying to claim every single cat that comes out of Texas. Never happened, never all. But what really infuriates me by what he's saying, is he's saying that we take people to the trapping school, I charge them to go to the school, then I take all their fur. Now what does that imply when you hear that? I'll tell you what that implies. That implies someone is being dishonest when they get students down to Texas school, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. Just to set the record straight, if you're a student at the Texas Trapping School, you're allowed 3 cats to bring home. You're paying us $1,500 for the week. Now, some things that people like Forrest do not seem to understand because they're too busy trying to just, I don't know, tear everybody else down so it makes them look better, I guess. When someone gives us $1,500 for the school, the food, the fuel, and what the ranch gets for the lodging leaves us about $700. Now, when we don't have students there, we're averaging 4.3 bobcats a day on average. Yes, I keep records. So 4.3 bobcats a day, they're averaging about $200. That's $800 a day in bobcats. So a student comes down, he's there for a whole week. Now if we just went out, and I just went out trapping with them, and I said, set here, set here, set here, set here, set here, it would cost me a couple of $1,000 for every single student I have going down there. Right now, if a student catches 3 bobcats, that pretty much pays for almost half his school. He can go back and sell fur if he wants to. He can keep all the raccoons, all the coyotes, all the badgers, all the fox, whatever he catches, he can keep. The cats, we don't. Now, someone like Forrest has jumped to this conclusion. That's $700 for a week. 5 days. Actually, it's six if you count the half Saturday and half Sunday. So that's 6 days. It's costing me, our predator control group, money to hold the school. Because with no students, we're doing $800 a day in bobcats. When we have the school, we're doing $800 a week with a student. We only have four there at a time. Plus, the cats that they catch up to three, we don't keep. They get to keep. Now, see, what Forrest is implying with this is that we have people come down and we let them catch all this fur, and then we take the money and then we beat our chest about it. And that's moronic. Last year, there was one guy that caught over his limit of three cats. He caught five. He's from Mississippi. Some guys didn't catch all three cats because we're not down there trapping, we're holding a school. So if I'm teaching someone how to run mafia sets and flat sets and different styles of dirt hole sets, and some guys want to get into calling and snaring and everything else, we're not running traps all day long like you're running a trap line. It's a school. But if they're out of state and they can pay for some of their school, that's good. But somehow him thinking, which I think is really is a look into his soul about how he thinks how other people would act, because apparently I think that's how he would act, is that we're taking fur from these guys and the money just so we can pad our numbers on our catches. Ludicrous. You know, there's some years on some of these cat pictures you see that there's 60 or 70 cats that's not in the picture. There was 173 cats last year. You go back through all my stuff online, you'll see the word we. You'll see there's Norm in the picture. Sometimes you'll see Albert Simpson from Pennsylvania in the picture. Sometimes you'll see Scott Adams from the picture. So out of the 173 cats last year, two of them would have been because someone caught more than their three. It's okay, we did 171. That makes a big difference. So, the reason I want to talk about this rumor is because it's childish to even think that way. And like I said, I think people that go around and do nothing but try to start stuff on somebody else, they just assume everybody else would act the way they would act. Because if it was strictly about the money or about the cat numbers, we wouldn't have the school. Because we lose money to have the school over what we could make with the fur prices the way they are right now. Definitely last year and the year before. Because what he's doing, he's calling my integrity out. And Forrest, you may not like my trapping. You might not like the traps I use, the sets I use, all that. Don't care. But when you start trying to find ways to make someone seem like they're dirty, and they're not, dude, I'm going to call you out on it. And for that reason, you're going to be the first person to get the Rumor Monger Award. And I personally think you should be ashamed for going down that route. And I got an idea for you, Forrest. Instead of spending all your time on the computer, putting down everybody else and coming up with every way where everybody else is cheating, how about you go out and actually catch some fur where they're not pictures from a mutual friend that we both have, that we both know that you post as your pictures when he asks you to run his lines because his ADC business is kicking. Now see, that's not a rumor. That's coming firsthand. You'll be better off spending your energy, Forrest, on going out and trapping and doing your own thing instead of trying to figure out every which way you can to put down other people and disassemble whatever it is you think they're doing, because you don't have the information. And what you were implying was absolutely false, and you should be ashamed. Well, guys, this is Clint Locklear. I really hope that you learn to start trapping like a kid. You start discovering your trap line. You start discovering different ways to trap, and you really enjoy the process instead of just doing something else in your life that's just systematic after systematic after systematic. Because being out in the woods is too cool of a thing to be a robot.